Hello, everyone. Welcome to Random Encounter 295 or 295. My name is John O. Logan, and computer problems are always annoying. So I sat down to record this podcast tonight, and completely out of nowhere, Service Host, Diagnostic Policy Service, has gone crazy on my computer and is consuming a great deal of my CPU and memory and has very high power usage all the time. And this appears to be a fairly widespread bug that is also very difficult to track down. So if you hear my computer fan like activate in the middle of recording, that's why. In the meantime, I think we could probably spend some time talking about some video games since this is a video game podcast. Hey, Zach, you're here.
Hello.
Yeah, and we're here to talk about one of your all-time favorite video games. Unfortunately, the way we would be doing that is by talking about one that you enjoyed but didn't love a whole lot.
That's true. Yuden was not what I was hoping, but it's okay.
Yeah, Yuden Chronicles, 100 Heroes. So, before we jump into this game, I just want to get this out of the way. You're a massive Suikoden fan, right?
I am, yeah. There's a painting that Steph Sabidlo did for me that is hanging above my television, and I just moved into my house, and I've already hung it up. So that's how much I love Suikoden, too.
Yes, I am aware that you adore this game, and for very, very good reasons. Suikoden 2 is a absolutely killer classic RPG. Amazing storyline, great characters, fantastic base building, some solid combat. And I think the most impressive part about Suikoden 2, for me anyway, is just how much of a perfect sequel it really is. It takes everything from the original Suikoden, which is a damn good game, and just improves on it immeasurably.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I like Suikoden 1 more than most, but Suikoden 2 is just, it elevates the game in basically every way, while still maintaining sort of that personal touch heart element that I think the first one had. And it's just the characters in Suikoden 2 are so good. And it's a great sequel.
Yeah, well, Suikoden is a fairly long-running series. It started off in 1996 on the PlayStation. We ended up getting 5 mainline titles. The last one came out on the PlayStation 2 in 2006. We've also had several spinoffs, Tactics, Tear Crisis.
I'm never really sure.
I made a joke about it like 100 episodes ago where we were calling it Tire Crisis. And a few other games that have never been released here. Theoretically, at some point in the future, we're supposed to get a remaster of the first two games. It was theoretically going to be coming out before this. It didn't. So we'll be getting that at some point in 2024, presumably.
One can hope.
Yes. So for the most part, and I'm sorry, I'm going to break your heart when I say this. For the most part, this is a dead series. It appears to be a dead series. Konami does not seem to be interested at all in ever coming back to it and reviving it or doing anything with it. But you know what happens when companies have IP that they're just not interested in developing anymore and the creators are still out there? They start a Kickstarter campaign.
Especially when it's a Konami product.
Yes, you're not wrong. So that happened, and the result was a pretty darn successful Kickstarter campaign for Yuden Chronicle 100 Heroes, which was cited as a spiritual successor of the Suikoden series, but specifically the Suikoden games on the PlayStation. So when you first heard about this Kickstarter, I remember that. Well, why don't you share with people what your reaction was?
I mean, I don't even remember. It's like all a blur. I remember because I think RP Gamer was actually the site that broke it with an interview, and I was like, what? And then just when you heard that Miriyama was back, and you heard that so many of the team was back, and you saw some of the early trailers, and it was like, well, this is Suikoden. Clearly it's Suikoden. And we'll get more into that.
It looks like Suikoden 3. I don't mean Suikoden 3, the PlayStation 2 game. I mean, like, if you were to continue the series on the PlayStation.
With that same sort of look that they had going with that. And so I think people on the site, were like, someone go check on Zach.
We all lost our goddamn minds.
Yeah. It was a big moment. It was probably the most exciting video game announcement I think I can remember. So yeah, I was hyped.
Apparently it raised approximately $4.5 million throughout its Kickstarter, which is a pretty impressive backing.
Yeah, I actually was not one of those backers because I tried to back it and then like my credit card bounced and it was like for like $500. And I was like, I could probably fix this. But then I was like, is $500 really how much money I should be spending on a video game? Probably not. So I never ended up backing it, which I'm still sad about, even if my, you know, my thoughts on it are kind of middling. But yeah, it was very successful. Doesn't surprise me.
Well, we'll get into your thoughts in a minute. It was supposed to be released in October 2022. Obviously, things happened and it was delayed about a year and a half. But now we finally got it. They didn't just leave their fans sitting around because they actually released a prequel in 2022, mm-hmm. which was not in the same genre technically. It was an action role-playing game, but a side-scroller essentially. You played that and reviewed it for the site. You really liked it. You gave it an 85.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It was it follows like sort of three characters sort of in an area to the side of where the main game takes place. But it was sort of a slight game, but it was very side quest heavy and the action wasn't super in depth, but it was just it knew what it wanted to be. It was quick. It was fast paced. I thought the characters were fun. I enjoyed my, 12, 13 hours with it, and it felt really snappy. And snappy is something that I really like, maybe even more now as a 38-year-old. So, yeah, I thought it was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
Cool. Well, the promise here is that Eden Chronicle 100 Heroes, I'm just going to start calling it 100 Heroes. The promise is that it attempts to recapture the magic of classic RPGs, mm-hmm. especially the Suikoden series. Before we dive into the specifics about the game, you enjoyed it. You gave it an 80, which is a good score. Mm-hmm. And how well did you think that it recaptured that magic, just in general?
In general, the magic is actually sort of what I think is missing. mm-hmm. I think it recaptures it in the broad strokes. It recaptures it in the sort of, boilerplate way. If you're just going to describe Suikoden, it has all those things, right? But I think it's the magic or sort of the soul of the series that it's missing. And it's still fun because I still enjoy all those trappings. Those trappings are fun. They're enjoyable. But the magic is what is missing.
Mechanically, it seems to be all here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're still you have an overworld map. You have over 100 heroes to collect. You have all three of the different, you have the three different battle types. So yeah, mechanically it's all there.
Okay. So one of the major points of the Suikoden series, unlike a lot of JRPGs of the era, which sometimes featured like empires and they said we're at war with the other empire, but realistically speaking, it was your party of like four people and a group of like 15 people. And that was the army. And you were fighting, everything was fought in like small little turn-based battles. Suikoden took a slightly different tack where it genuinely felt like these massive nations were rising up and there were these huge battles. It felt very epic and sweeping. And I'm wondering, what is the plot here in 100 Heroes? And does it recapture any of that, that nations in warfare feel?
That it certainly does. From a broad perspective, the main character here is Noah. I know they've sort of marketed it as having three protagonists, but really Noah is the main character. And he joins sort of a city watch, which is a group of mercenaries who work for one nation and something called the League of Nations. And it's sort of an alliance of nations that sort of work together. In the very first sort of hour or so, you go on a mission with a group from the Empire who you're sort of rivals with, but you're not at war with, at least not yet. And that group is led by a guy named Sign, who is a lieutenant in the Empire. And the idea is they're trying to go capture what's called a primal rune lens, which is a super powerful, almost like rune, that is like has magical properties that the idea is that they're going to use it for the benefit of the people.
Irune, you say?
Indeed. Noah and Sign hit it off. They actually do find the primal lens, which is extraordinarily rare. And then the narrative sort of shifts 6 months forward. The Empire has possession of the primal lens, and they're sort of lording it over the League of Nations, or and they're not going to give them sort of their cut of it. And some nations are sort of rolling over to it, some are not. And then once the Empire starts to sort of show its hand that they're going to try to take over the League of Nations, Noah sort of becomes a leader in that group. And then Sign, of course, is a member of the Empire, and they sort of come to blows to some degree over that, while sort of maintaining their friendship.
Okay, so you still have that the friendship in the center there, which yes. is very important to say Suikoden II.
Indeed.
Unfortunately, it does seem like I said magic. You say soul in the review because the characters, they just aren't that interesting.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Unfortunately, Noah is interestingly like a less interesting character than like Termagdoll or Ryu from Suikoden II. Sign, I have to get into spoilers to talk about why I don't find him as interesting, so I won't do that. But they're both okay. And then there's a couple other side characters that are sort of fun, maybe a little too tropey. And then every other character in this game, I think I said this in my review, can be boiled down to a single adjective. And that adjective usually is like mid. or like if you like a Sindarin stereotype, you're going to see like 50 of those female characters in this game. And so it doesn't hit any of the notes of the personal. It doesn't invest us in the personal conflict in a way. It sort of very quickly turns it into a very simple good versus evil thing where you don't have those sort of pushing conflicts. You don't have that personal investment of Tur with his father or Ryu with Joey or, I don't know, even in Suikoden 5, there's in all the Suikoden games, there's that personal investment of family ties or friend ties. And here, the conflict overwhelms those ties and never allows them to be created or allows any sort of interpersonal conflicts to erupt as a result of that. And so I think that is the fundamental flaw with this game, is that it's not about personal conflict. It's about you want to take over our country and we would like you not to do that. And that's all there is to it. And that is even Suikoden 4 is going to do a better job than that. With the personal conflicts, and it's Tear Crisis maybe is in the same general ballpark, but even that I think is a little better on this front. So It is deeply disappointing on that front for me.
Yeah, I know the main character isn't a silent protagonist, but I mean with the first game of Suikoden, and to be honest, any game really with a silent protagonist, the secret of making a silent protagonist inherently interesting is you give them good backstory, but you also have to surround them with compelling characters. And, yes. and like you say here, the characters just aren't strong enough surrounding the main character to boost up his blandness.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, even if it was a few characters, because I don't want to oversell Suikoden 1 and 2, right? Like there are plenty of characters that are like nothing in those games that you recruit once, you never talk to them again. But you still had Nami and Joey. You still had Pol and Cleo. And I hate to consistently compare it to Suikoden, but I don't think there's any way I can't.
I don't think that you should compare it to Suikoden. Yeah. I mean, it's marketed specifically as a spiritual successor.
Right. And I generally try not to do that. But in this case, like, there's no way to disassociate myself from it, but also to disassociate this game from it, because that's what it wants to be. And it doesn't get to be that because it's not that.
Yeah, which is kind of a shame, really. I mean, that was the Suikoden. I really like Suikoden. I really like Suikoden 2. But the reason why I really like those two games is because, especially at the time for me, they were delivering a storyline which I had never really experienced up to that point in SNES JRPGs, for example. Like I said, yeah, there were wars. Like in Final Fantasy VI, it's a war with the Empire, but there's no war. The Returners are like just a bunch of, they live in a cave. That's the entire army. Whereas in those games, they were just such massive sweeping conflicts and they had such interesting personalities behind the motivations of those conflicts. And yeah. without that, I feel like as good as the game is, it can only get so good without right. without the thing that made Suikoden special.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, there are times when it brushes up against it. Like there's, you kind of have to go around, as you can probably guess, and try to get the League of Nations to sort of, you know, all back each other. And there are a couple of individual stories that are solid enough, but even thinking about, because you're doing very similar things in Suikoden 1 and 2, right, where you're going around to these different countries or different factions, and you're trying to get them behind you. But they're even the best ones, and there's one with a king who's sort of a coward, even that one, he never moves beyond that. He doesn't grow in the way that I think the game wants him to. And maybe in the sequel that they've said they're making, he will. But that's not really that in this game, it didn't do enough of it.
As I understand it, as you mentioned, another thing that really falls real flat is the voice acting.
Oh, it's pretty dreadful. You know, it's interestingly, and I don't think I said this in my review, but like the British voice acting is like decent. And I think it's because, and my wife is British, she's always like, they're always pulling people from theater backgrounds in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a voice direction issue, because there are a couple of people in there that are okay, but like it gets down to the same thing as the characterization. It's like they said, you are supposed to be enthusiastic, so just read all your lines that way. Don't vary that. Don't do anything different from that. Just like shout it like that all the time. And it feels like they did it on purpose, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, I mean, coming from a theatrical background myself, I can understand that because, I mean, let's put it this way. A lot of scripts aren't very good, and theatrical actors, in a lot of cases, really need to put their own work in and develop their own characters. And, you know, they have their imagination. And even if they're not creating their own lines, there's a certain usual life behind the lines that they have put all of the work into. Where I don't know what the background of the... So it's a British track. Is the other one American?
They have all kinds of accents, right. But for the most part, it is American and British, but they will have accents for people who are supposed to be Middle Eastern, people who are supposed to be, I think, Russian. But usually it's like one-offs in those situations. Whereas like the Empire of Galdea is supposed to be British people, essentially. They're all British, and the people in the League of Nations, for the most part, are American. That's kind of the separation of the voice tracks.
All right. Well, I mean, let's briefly jump ahead here and talk about the other side of the audio question. How is the music?
It's okay. It's pretty good. Like I don't know. It definitely doesn't have a sort of a consistent vibe, and I think it's because they had a variety of different composers work on it, which a lot of games do nowadays. But it felt like there wasn't like sort of a controlling voice sort of guiding what the music was going to sound like. And so like the main track, which everyone has heard in the trailer, is amazing. It's really good. They play it. Every time they played it during the game, I was like, yeah, I got a little goosebumpy. But other than that, like I said this when I wrote the review, and it's doubly true now, I can't name a single track or even like hum one to myself. So that's pretty forgettable, to be honest with you. It was pleasant. It was fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to jump to something because this is getting a little bit depressing in terms of it sounds like this game it has just missed the mark and is terrible. And that's not the case at all. The other similarities with the Suikoden games, like you mentioned, overworld map, turn-based combat with six characters. I'm going to jump to what I, reading between the lines of your review, is probably one of your favorite qualities in this game. And to be honest, was always my favorite quality in a Suikoden game, which is the base building mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So in Suikoden, you would, the 100 heroes, they don't, at least in the first game and the second one, like not all of them fight with you. A lot of them are heroes in their own way, and their own way usually involves, I don't know, setting up a gambling den in a castle. But you would find people, they would join your team, they would go to your castle, and they would help build up your castle or your base into a thriving community. And I loved these base building mechanics. What do they do with that here, and how does it differ from Suikoden?
It's a little more involved, and you have more customization, and it's more like you can choose sort of how the building happens. So essentially what happens is once you get your base, because you do get a base in this game, you get sort of a grid, and that grid might say like open a lumberyard, And so you go over to it. It says, like, to open the lumberyard, you need to recruit a character. It won't necessarily tell you who until you've met them. And then you also need to have a certain number of materials. And the gathering materials part is not too much of an issue, especially because your castle will eventually start making those materials for you. And when you get to areas of the game, when you need those materials, you usually will have them. But you can sort of like fill that node out, and then you can fill another node out to get a better yield or different items from it. Or you can open an armory shop, and then, you know, later down the line, you can say, I'm going to expand the armory shop's inventory with, you know, this volume of population. And you can always see how it's going to impact how many people are in your castle. You have another node for just upgrading the castle itself, which will increase your population, make it look nicer, give you a larger grid to work with. And so you're just kind of constantly like and it's one of the things that Rising did really well too. It gives you that constant feeling of progression in your base building. It's not necessarily like in depth. We're not talking like building a farm in Stardew here, but we are talking about like this ability to just constantly little bit by bit to build it up. And it feels a lot more organic than it did in any Suikoden game, because in Suikoden games before, it was just like, oh, you hit 80 recruits. Now your castle is level 3. And so the base building part of it, I thought was really fun, and it was really satisfying.
Neat. One of the more actually frustrating isn't quite the right word. With Suikoden, with 100 characters to recruit, or in this case, more than 100 characters to recruit, I believe, it can be a little frustrating to find them all. Especially if you want, I guess, the special ending. You got to get all 120 Stars of Destiny in the Suikoden games. So in those games, it was as simple sometimes as walking up to someone and saying, hey, you want to join my castle? And they'd be like, hell yeah, and they'd just go there. Other times you'd do a subquest for them, or they would join because they joined your party. How easy is it to find new recruits in this world? And did you find yourself ever getting a little frustrated that it was an easier, or was it too easy?
It definitely wasn't too easy, because I didn't get them all, and I really wanted to. There's actually a bug out there, I think, that may have just been patched that I didn't realize at the time would have prevented me from recruiting one of them. But you have 120 in this game, and it's very similar to Suikoden in the way that you were describing it. It's 120 here instead of 128, but or 108 rather. And
some of them, 108 Stars of Destiny? I thought it was 120. Yeah, I got the two confused.
Yeah. So you might go up to someone and they might just immediately get recruited, or it might be that your castle has to be at a certain level and you need to be at a certain level, or it might be that they want some materials. Or the guy, and this is the one that drove me crazy, the fisherman guy said, I want this specific fish. And I went to every single fishing spot so many times. And there was one that was hiding that I couldn't find to get the fish that he wanted. Or like the guy who would open up a trading shop says, like, you need to make like 50K from trading for me to join you. And I am not good at math, so I didn't do that one. But I didn't think any of them were terribly obtuse. Some of them frustrated me a little bit. And I wish I could have found them all, but like, it's not essential. I still feel like the ending, while I kind of get a feeling for what would change with the ending, if you got them all, I don't think that it would have been something super substantial, not like in, for example, Suikoden 2, which gives you this whole other path. And so I really still enjoyed the character recruitment. I still got that dopamine rush every time I got someone. When I walked up to someone and I saw the little character portrait, which meant that I was going to be able to recruit them, I pulled out my notepad and I'm like, all right, so what's their name? Where are they? What are they going to need? Because there's no tracker in this game, which is maybe a little frustrating for some people, I'm sure. As soon as I got them, I was super excited. And I got over 100 and I was able to build up my base to the max level, but I didn't quite get all of them. But I still think the character recruitment is fun here. And I never did it in previous games without a guide. And I didn't anticipate that I would in this one either. But I certainly tried and it was fun.
Were there any characters that you recruited that were your favorites? Okay. Were there any additions to the castle that the characters brought to the party that were your favorites?
Oh, okay. Yes. So the hot spring is super fun. And I'm not usually into hot springs in video games because I think they're gross. But in this case, it's not like a gross way of doing it. It gives you like these little conversations between the people in the hot spring. Oh, there's one that allows you to put on like productions of like Shakespeare plays in the theater, and you have to choose who you cast to get like sort of a better score. And the better score you get, sort of the more rewards you get. So like, I was like, all right, I'm going to make this character, Romeo, because, and they'll kind of tell you how good of an actor they are. So that was super fun. The cooking mini game from 2 is back in basically exactly the same form, where you're trying to figure out what dishes people would like in different things. So like, there's a lot of really fun little mini games to do around the castle. Definitely more than there ever were in a previous Suikoden game. And if there's one thing that they really add, it's the things in the base. It's the things around the base. They just give you so much to do. You don't have to do it because the game's not hard, but it is definitely a nice addition.
It's fun to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I really enjoyed that part.
Okay, well, aside from the obvious inspirations of the game, I wanted to ask, I think the thing that people are really going to be drawn to here is the visual style, because we're dealing with, as we said, a game that is reminiscent of 2D PlayStation RPGs. It obviously looks way better than that, but it's reminiscent of that. But also, it adds in a heaping helping of 2D HD inspiration, although it is not a 2D HD game. It's obviously inspired by that kind of art style. Were you a fan of the graphics here? Was there anything that didn't quite work with you, or were you just like, this is pretty?
Pretty much, this is pretty. I thought it was really gorgeous. I think that the sprite work could have been a little more expressive. As amazing as the sprites looked, I think back to like even something like Suikoden 2, like sprite work in that game was so expressive. You think about like the movements Nami would make, and you don't have that here, but the sprite work is really cool. But the backgrounds are just gorgeous. They're beautiful. Some of the settings that they use are really striking. They do some like interesting cinematography. That's not the word for it in video games, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
And it looks really great. I had some stuttering sometimes when I was going through some busy areas, but it wasn't anything that really upset me. And I didn't have crazy long load times or anything like that. I have heard that on the Switch, it runs like hot garbage. So just be aware of that. Anybody
on the Switch?
Listening? Yeah.
Really?
go figure, right? That never happens.
If you say so, Zach.
Yeah. It ran very well on my Steam Deck. I'm sure it runs even better on PS5. And so I had very few complaints about the graphical performance, and I ran into very few bugs in general. So, I thought it was gorgeous.
Hmm. Okay, well, let's move on to the, the meat of the RPG, which would be the battle system. So the central battle system here is pretty bog standard for a Suikoden game. It's a six-person party. Mm-hmm. You have two lines. Is that correct? Where like the people in front, people in back,
yep.
And you fight a turn-based battle. Does it do anything else aside from that, or
it
is
does.
It just?
And I don't think I even mentioned this in my review, but like they'll occasionally put in what they call like a battle gimmick, but like they're totally not interesting. It's like, oh, there's this enemy, and they're gonna fire an attack on the left side, so you need to hit the gimmick button. They literally call it a gimmick. You hit the gimmick button to make yourself move behind the rock so you don't get hit by it, and that's like all there is to it. And that's maybe the most complicated gimmick in the entire game. So like they don't do much with any of that. Like I think that I remember seeing it and being like, oh, positions are going to be important. They absolutely are not. It is Suikoden through and through. Like you have rune slots that you can use for increasing your battle capabilities or magic. You have like sort of these SP abilities that allow you to sort of fire off different abilities, and you sort of gain SP with each round. But at the end of the day, it felt like Suikoden in that way. One criticism I leveled against it is that I think, and this is true of a lot of the game, like the UI is slow, the menus run slowly, and the auto battles are so slow. And I don't think they actually are that slow. It's just like when I see that set up on my screen, like I expect when I hit auto battle for them to just like all just like go crazy on the enemies and for the round to be over in 10 seconds, even if I didn't kill them. So even when you're targeting different enemies, it doesn't fire off the attacks at the same time, which I know sounds like a nitpick. But for me, like I love, again, this gets to what I was talking about earlier, like the snappiness of a Suikoden game. And it just isn't snappy in that way, or in the menus or in the storytelling. It just it just feels sluggish in a lot of ways. And I think that it's a little too easy, which, again, I'm not going to say that a Suikoden game has ever been hard, because it hasn't. But at least it was quick. And here it's like easy and slow. And maybe it's just my old age, but I don't have patience for that as so much anymore.
I mean, it's kind of a shame because it kind of sounds like they really didn't do anything interesting with it. Whereas turn-based combat in the last few years, especially let's say some of the stuff that's been put forward by Square Enix with like Octopath Traveler, for example, using the break boost system, or even Bravely Default using brave points and things like that to create an element of gamble and risk, a gambling and risk into the battles. This just seems like it's pretty standard turn-based combat.
Yeah. And, you know,
not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that. Yeah. But I just feel like we've moved past that at this point.
Yeah. If there's one thing that I think if we've moved past, it's, you know, just hit A to win in even random battles. And I think that as much as I know they wanted to honor the legacy of JRPGs and Suikoden in particular, that's one part where I was like, you could have added some more because there is customization on its face, but it's not in any way necessary. And so it's never like a thing that you would need to worry about. There is a hard mode, granted, and maybe it's a thing there. I don't know, but but
mechanically, it would just be harder. It's not the, that doesn't sound like there's inherently anything mechanically interesting about it.
I would agree with that. It's still fine. It's good. I enjoyed it. I didn't hate the battles, but it could have done more.
Yeah. I mean, even for just like pretty, like I said, bog standard turn-based, you can do things like, I don't know, like have a timeline at the top of the screen and like certain abilities, like change the positioning of the actions and things like that up there.
Oh, you can still maintain. It does actually do that, but it does do that, but only barely. And it doesn't really make much of a difference. Like occasionally if you're casting like a really strong healing spell, it'll move you one over. But it's such not a factor that I forgot to mention it to you, and I forgot to write it in my review because it's not a factor really in the way that it would be in like a Bravely or an Octopath.
Yeah, it's not a strategic element of the battle.
No, it's not really.
All right. Well, there are other battles in this game, as there are in Suikoden games. In prior games, there were usually two other types of battles. One were dual battles and the other were like big army battles. So they're both here as well. But again, it seems like they're being used to not to the same effect as its inspiration. So let's talk the duels. What are the duels like here?
I like the duels because I think they're like really cinematic. And
for the record, I friggin' hated the duels. It was my least favorite part of Suikoden.
That's fair. I could totally see that. They're actually kind of different here, but not really. There's still definitely like a rock, paper, scissors element to it. So essentially, normally you have two options. You can either counter or you can attack. And if you're countering, basically the idea is if they're attacking you, you're still going to take a little bit of damage. It's not like it was in the previous games where if you countered, you would just like step back and then you would smack them in the head. Here, like they'll hit you a little bit, but you'll also hit them back and you won't take as much damage, or you can just attack. And then once you do enough damage, eventually it will build up like a break. But the break essentially just means that you're doing an unblockable attack. It's not going to end the fight. It doesn't do some like enormous amount of damage. And because it just didn't feel super well balanced. So like I realized eventually that like if I just hit attack every turn, even if they were countering me, I was doing enough damage that it was better than if I was countering and potentially not doing any damage. And a lot of times it felt very scripted. And so like the duels, as you said, were never a highlight, I think, of the Suikoden games, although I think some of them are very impactful. Here, they just felt like scripted and not anything amazing. Like they weren't bad. They weren't inherently worse or better than the original Suikoden ones, really. I just slightly preferred the original Suikoden ones.
Mm. There are also the army battles. So in Suikoden, they were a little bit different in each game, but basically kind of followed the same strategy, which was the more heroes that you have, the bigger your army. You'd face your army, and there'd usually be like a rock, paper, scissors mechanic there as well, where you choose like a long range attack, or your fighters go in, and you'd hopefully be able to get through the battle without any of your main characters dying.
Yeah.
And if they did, you'd probably want to load up an old save. So what are armies like here?
So in this case, most of them are set up on like a 3x4 grid, and you have like, I don't know, usually 7 or 8 units on your side, and then however many units they have on their side. But the units don't have anything that really distinguish them. Like they might have some specialized attacks, but it doesn't really, it's not like the magic, like you have a magic unit, or you have a ranged unit where you have to kind of do that triangle or a rock, paper, scissors that you might have had to do in previous games. Here, it's literally just like move your units, move them towards the enemy. Whoever does more damage, the other side's going to retreat, and then you're going to hopefully do it again. And so really the strategy is like try to get three units, which is the maximum on a single square, and then walk them towards the enemy, and then they'll probably retreat. And then you'll walk towards the enemy again, and then they'll probably retreat one more time, and then you'll walk towards them again, and then they'll die. It is, I mean, it's a good storytelling technique sometimes, but even compared to like Suikoden 1, where it's literally a rock, paper, scissors match, like there is no strategy. Maybe there is. I don't know, because I didn't need to. I didn't change my units up. I didn't do anything. I just said, like, walk forward, kill the enemy. Die, the end. So
press A to win.
Yeah, again, press A to win, and that's pretty much all it was. So yeah, I thought the army battles were a little underwhelming, but not, there aren't that many of them, so it didn't bother me too much.
That's a shame. One of my favorite things about the army battles in Suikoden 1 was that they would these characters, like these little squadrons, they would be like they would be groupings of like some of the characters from your castle. So like all the blacksmiths, for example, would be attacking together, or like the thieves would attack together, and that would, or not attack, they would try to get intel on the other side. And I always thought that was like super fun and gave it a lot of character.
Oh, I agree with you. And I think that gets back to a criticism I made 35 minutes ago now about sort of the togetherness and investment in these people. And it's not there with the army battles either.
That's a shame. Look, I was really, really, really hoping that you were going to just love this game, Zach. I think we all were, because we all know how much you love Suikoden, and a lot of people love Suikoden. And obviously, Yuden Chronicle Rising gave you a lot of hope. So all of that being said, it's an 80. An 80 is not a bad score. It is not a bad game.
Don't tell that to people on the internet.
Well, the internet thinks anything below a 95 is a bad score. And if you tell them it's not, they, I don't know, call you a shill for the gaming industry, paradoxically.
Yeah. I get slammed whether I give something a high score or a low score. So I just accept it. And I think it's funny. Or yeah, that's a solid score like I did here.
There's a really interesting conversation going on right now. Elsewhere, not in the gaming industry, actually, on the tech side of things. And MKBHD recently released a review about the, I think it's called the AI pin, the Humane AI pin. And it is essentially a hands-free AI assistant, which you clip to the front of your shirt, and it doesn't have a screen. It has a little projector on it that can project things. And this thing has been getting mocked routinely for months and months and months now. And reviews came out, and the reviews were predictably terrible. It's apparently a really, really bad product. MKBHD, as MKBHD does, released an extremely thoughtful, like long review, about 25 minutes, and just slammed the crap out of it. And some people on the internet went after him and saying, like, how can you do this? You just killed this company. You just cost people their jobs. This company is going to go to business because of you. And he delivered a 13-minute rebuttal to that. Actually, it's not even really a rebuttal. It's a conversation about like what the job of a reviewer is. I think I might give it to make the entire team watch it, actually, because it's a really interesting it's an interesting thing that I think a lot of people seem to think our job is to act as a promotional and marketing wing of the gaming industry. Yeah. And it's not. Nope. Like, our job is to give people our unbiased account of what the game is, what it does well, what it doesn't do well, how much we enjoyed it. And it's a personal account. Like, mileage may vary. That's the beauty of a review. You find reviewers or a site that has a philosophy that you seem to get behind, and you make your own judgment calls. But reviews are helpful to put you on the right path of those judgment calls.
Yeah.
I know it. It drives you a little crazy, and it drives me a little bit crazy too when you're either attacked being a shill if you give it like a 95, and if you give something an 80, you're like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. This game is brilliant, even before they played it.
Yeah. I mean, I did like film review stuff in college. And so that's sort of how I got my start. And Roger Ebert, who, you know, most people know who he is, he said that a man goes to see a movie, and I'll paraphrase it. A person goes to see a movie, and it is a critic's job to be honest about what that person's reaction to it was. And at the end of the day, it's always what I think about. And so, like, even with something like this, like, I know that, like, I framed it around Suikoden constantly because that is the experience I had with it. And regardless of anything else, like, it's not my job to be promotional or anything. And like, someone got really upset with me because he's like, oh, Murayama just died. And I didn't mention it at all in my review. And I'm like, well, that doesn't have anything to do with my review. And so it's just interesting how personal people take things. And I agree, like, sometimes it is going to close a small company. It's not going to close this company. And my review is not an outlier here either. But we have to be honest about our reaction to it. Otherwise, what are we doing? I can go work in PR, make better money than the $0 I make here. I'm really curious to see that video. So if you could send that to me, I'd really like to watch it because it's something I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I'd love to. It's a fascinating look into what a reviewer does and what their job ideally is. And that's not to say that every reviewer, you know, has those professional standards, and certainly not the professional standards of MKBHD, who arguably is like the best in the biz when it comes to tech reviews. But that is what we aspire to do. We aspire to be objective, to give our honest opinion about things. And if we manage to send a little traffic to something that deserves, in our opinion, a little bit of attention, that's great. And unfortunately, if something is not living up to it, our standards or our opinions, you know, we can flag it for people too. Games are expensive. But the reality is that an 80 is, you're not flagging a damn thing here. You're not waving people off of playing 100 Heroes. Nope. Because an 80 is a good score.
Yep, it sure is. It just is. I mean, I really sat with this score because I think and it's funny, I think if you listen to this conversation, I think a person might say, like, that sounds like you would score it less than an 80. And if you read my review, I think you might even say that. But at the end of the day, like, I was trying to weigh as much as I could my own personal disappointment with it not being what it could be, with it being what it is, and sort of balance that. And I had to be honest and say, like, you know, it didn't live up to my expectations, and the way that I frame it might be a little more negative than I really feel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hate review scores in general. I'm like, let's go read the review. I know we have to do it because for a million reasons, I hate scores, but
yeah. Because I make you, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a fascinating conversation, and I think about it a lot.
Yeah, and also this is our reaction. I know we're getting a little bit in the weeds here about reviews, but the reaction that we have in our analysis in the moment, it can change over time, just like any work of art can be reassessed over time. There are movies that are considered to be like groundbreaking masterpieces that got absolutely panned by critics at the time, and then they were reassessed years later.
2001 got crushed.
Yeah, and there are lots of games out there that were hailed upon their release as a new start for the industry that fizzled out really, really hard and are now looked back on as missteps at best. I know there are a lot of reviews that I've written for the site, especially in my earlier days, that I wish I could go back and give the game a higher review. Like, I think maybe it's just nostalgia, but like, I wish that I could give like some of my Yakuza reviews a higher review. I do. And I wish I could, I don't know, go back and give some reviews. I'm not going to mention any because I don't want to pick on. Actually, no, I'll pick on Romancing Saga 3. I wish I could give Romancing Saga 3 a lower review than I did. But yeah, see, that's safe. My opinion about that is pretty well logged. So opinions change, and who knows? Your opinion about this game may change over time. But for now, it's an 80, which is a good score, but it just is lacking in certain aspects that you were hoping it would be better. And that's fine.
I agree. I still enjoyed my time with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to something that you gave not what we're going to talk about, but you gave the source of it a 97.
I sure did. Stand by.
You shill. How much did Square Enix pay you to do that? And give your own summon, your own
Yeah, that's they released the DLC just for me. I asked them to do it for the 97 and they did it. So that's the way it
went. Well, Final Fantasy 16 is coming out with some new DLC, and the name of it is Final Fantasy 16 The Rising Tide. So a few months ago, we got Final Fantasy 16 Echoes of the Fallen. You really enjoyed it. Again, you gave it an 80. Not a bad score.
No.
You said it had fun and challenging boss fights, a great dungeon to explore. But you also said that the story didn't really do much. There was no real character growth, and it was pretty short. I think from this, we can discern what you Zach, love in a game, and that's you really do value characters.
I do. That's very true.
You very much value characters. Yeah. So you went from a 97 to an 80, and now we have The Rising Tide. We don't have the review out yet, and I don't think it'll be out by the time we have this published, but I'm curious, what's your takeaway here? Like, what would you give it? Would it be closer to the 97 or would it be closer to the 80?
It'll be closer to the 80. I can't land on an exact number yet because I finished it about an hour before recording. So I'm still sort of mulling it. I think it'll be somewhere in the mid 80s probably, because I did like it better than Echoes of the Fallen, but I still think that it didn't deliver a lot, again, on the story or character front. So it delivered in a lot of other ways. And delivers a lot of additional content, even on top of the story that you get to play, which is not all that long. It's maybe 4 or 5 hours when they give you like a roguelike that you can play, and they give you some more iconic abilities to play around with, which they did not do in Echoes of the Fallen. So overall, I'm positive on it. The score in the 80s is positive. I enjoyed my time with it. I thought it was better than Echoes of the Fallen, but it's not living up to the bar of a Monolith or a FromSoft DLC. Let's put it that way.
Mm. What are some of the new mechanics that are included in the game?
So the main thing it adds is a new set of iconic abilities. So those of you who have played 16 may remember that, you know, they mention Leviathan the Lost. So it's an icon who's sort of missing from Final Fantasy 16. And it is not a spoiler to say that Leviathan is very much a presence in The Rising Tide. In fact, that is the entire thrust of it.
It's called The Rising Tide.
Indeed it is. and so you get
Titan.
No, indeed. So you get a new set of iconic abilities. They are Leviathans, who is actually very different in the way that those abilities play. It's very ranged. It's sort of like you get like a water gun almost to play around with. You get some other abilities that sort of like move enemies around, but you're not getting a lot of high damage abilities. You're getting a lot of sort of shifting and moving things abilities as Leviathan. So it was fun to play around with. It is 100% not my play style in 16 in particular. Like, I want to be up in their face, but I enjoyed kind of playing around with Leviathan's abilities and just getting a new icon. I thought was a nice change of pace for a game that I have beaten twice now. So yeah.
I'm looking at some of the screenshots here for the game. It looks, I mean, let's be Final Fantasy 16 is a good looking game. I don't think I don't think anyone's going to be debating that particular point. But one of the things that I would like to ask you about is I'm looking at some pretty nifty retro style art here.
Oh, yeah. So the retro style art, after you clear the Rising Tide, and we'll kind of step back into the story in a minute here. But after you clear it, you get to go into sort of a roguelike where you have like 20 levels where Clive is, you know, and it's very there's a name for it in DMC. I hate to bring up DMC because people always accuse 16 of it, but there's like apparently a mode that is very much aping from DMC where like it's 100% a roguelike where you are getting new abilities as you go through it. You can sort of like upgrade your damage abilities. You can upgrade your HP. And as you're going through it, you are using these classic menus to sort of navigate what you're going to do within that like sort of roguelike section. It's super fun. It's got like the little beeps and it's got the hand, and it just it scratched my nostalgia itch very well.
Yeah, I mean I'm just looking at this, it's scratching my nostalgia itch too. It just looks look at him, these little pixel,
little cute
pixel
Clive.
Well, I'm glad that this game gave you something that the previous DLC didn't, which seems to be new mechanics, like a new thing. This it sounds like this feels like an actual expansion rather than just like a little bit more content. And I know that you love 16.
I do. And I wouldn't go so far as, I mean, it definitely expands. And they've said that, like, that we're putting everything we had left into this DLC because it's probably going to be the last DLC. And they advertised it as having like 10 hours worth of content. I'd say that it took me about 5 hours probably to do all the additional side quests, clear the new area, do the fights, do the Leviathan fight, which, again, none of those things are spoilers. You've seen all those things online. So it doesn't feel, I think about, I hate to bring it up again, but I think about like what Monolith's offering for a DLC for a similar price. And it's not even touching that, but it does definitely give you more to play with.
Interesting. Well, before I let you go, I was actually going to bring up our discussion question, but I want to bring this up first just because I missed the Final Fantasy VII spoiler cast for a variety of reasons. I kind of was updating people on my progress through Rebirth on this podcast, and then the follow-up episode happened and I fell off it. Also, because I utterly hated the second half of this game, which is so annoying because I thought the first half of Final Fantasy Rebirth was magic, pure magic. I loved it. I thought it was so good. And then it just completely lost me. I can't think of another game that I have played in my life that I have found the front and the back of the game to be so polar opposites in my reception.
That's really interesting to me. And I understand there are definitely parts of the second half of the game that didn't work for me. Was it like burnout on the open world? Was it the ending? Was it, fight?
Yeah, the Rufus fight destroyed me. I hate it. I can't stand. I don't like gimmick fights, and I really don't like gimmick fights when they are really not telegraphed that they're gimmick fights. But also, there was so much of this game I just adored, like the environments, the way that expanded the storyline. I will say that, except for the ending is very divisive, and we're not going to talk about the ending here because I suspect there are a lot of people who still haven't played the game, and I do not want to spoil the ending. You can probably guess what the big question is, but everything up to that point, I thought, was a relatively flawless expansion of Final Fantasy VII and everything that made Final Fantasy VII great. And because of my enjoyment of the storyline, I genuinely am looking forward to the next entry in the Final Fantasy VII series, which I've been making jokes about remake, rebirth, recycle. If the third game is not called Reunion, I mean, come on.
Apparently, in the Ultimania that was recently translated, and this is something that Tin told me on the spoiler cast, they actually were originally going to call it Reunion. They were going to call it Rebirth Reunion, but it was it's a name that they use for Crisis Core at some other point. So I don't think it'll be Reunion. But like in my head, I thought it was going to be Reunion so hard that
because they are telegraphing that
accidentally
the whole
called it that during the spoiler cast.
Anyway, I'm not taking you to task for review because you give it a 93. And again, things are subjective. And again, like the first half of the game, holy crap, I loved it so much. I don't know. It's been a long time since I played a game that was that polarized for me.
I'm just curious in general. I mean, because you've told me some things that you didn't like about it, but in general, like from a design philosophy perspective, what was it that really you hated about the second half of the game?
It wasn't just open world burnout. It was open world burnout combined with forced use of mini games that were not all that fun, with undercooked mechanics mixed with, also just some of the worst Ubisoft based crap out there. Also, a lot of the fights in the second half of the game stopped relying on skill. And I am not good at the combat in Final Fantasy VII. I'm just not. I'm bad at it. I am bad at this game. But even in the second half of the game, a lot of that stopped being about skill, and a lot of it started being about chance, to the point where the final battle, for example, again, no spoilers about who it is or what it is, but it's RNG all the way, whether or not you're going to be one hit killed in the last battle repeatedly. And then there's the whole controversy about the confusing menus and whether, like, if you lose a battle, where are you going to restart? Who knows? You might restart at the beginning of the battle you just lost. You might restart before the cutscene and half an hour ago. A personal thing is I cannot stand chained battles like that where you don't get a breath. It just is exhausting, and not just on a physical level, like on a storytelling level, it just eventually just burns you out. And then if you lose you lose one of the battles later in that chain of battles, it absolutely kills the momentum of the story because it stopped dead at that point. And then there was the ending, which I found to be controversial, and I don't think for the same reasons. We'll talk about it after the podcast, because I don't want, again, to spoil it. But controversial for reasons that I don't think a lot of people are saying. But then again, there's so many great things about it. Yuffie is an absolute joy to play. The realization of a lot of the areas, and I'm not talking about the Golden Saucer. Costa del Sol was amazing. Just mm-hmm. a phenomenal environment to explore. One of my favorite places to be. A lot of the new side content, great. The way they use chocobos, fantastic. Chocobo racing, you're right. They just put Mario Kart in the damn game. and not every mini game is a winner or can be a winner, and it won't be everybody's cup of tea. But some of them are just, it's so incentivized to play them. That damn gliding chocobo game is one of the most mechanically frustrating experiences I've had in games for quite some time. I don't know. I thought that it wasn't even that they front loaded the game. It's just the first half of it was infinitely better than the second half of it, in my opinion.
That's fair. It's funny because I enjoyed the second half better. So, but yeah, I have waxed poetic enough, but I'm sad to hear that you didn't like the second half as much.
Yeah, it's, well, again, this is a very good, the reason why I'm bringing this up is it's a very good, you know, that's reviewing. That's reviewing. It is, some people have different opinions. And also, like, I occasionally went online and looked at what other people were having problems. And like, there are some people who have significant issues with this game, and they say it sucks and it's terrible and the second half is terrible. But then I look at what they don't like about it, and I'm like, okay, don't lump me. I don't want to be lumped in with you.
I understand that feeling. Trust me. Like, when people didn't like the ending of Remake, I'm like, it's for totally different reasons than the one you're talking about, Bubby. So please do not include me in that conversation. But whenever I said I don't like the ending, I knew everybody was lumping me in with those people. And I'm like, okay, I'm just not even going to talk about it.
I mean, that's kind of something that I was wishing throughout this game. That was the only thing about the storyline that bugged me a little bit, was that I kind of wish that the Whispers were genuinely, they were done. They were beaten. I really wish that the game, even though we theoretically had beaten Fate at the end of the first game, I felt that we were still slaves to it throughout this game. I wish there was a little bit more freedom in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they made a big, they definitely indicated they were going to do something big with that ending of Remake, and they did not do it as much. I'm happy they didn't, because I wanted it to stay more faithful, but I think that is a totally valid criticism.
And the thing that bothered me most about it was Square Enix's blatant cost-cutting measures and cheapness in the review, because like in the first scene, there was this one Shinra guard that was in Nibelheim, who was clearly being played by the same actor who plays Cloud. Like, the voice was the exact same. It was just an obvious attempt to save money by not hiring enough voice actors. They were just like, he's in studio, let's just use him. Just change your voice a little bit. Change your tone. It was frankly speaking, insulting.
Yeah, I agree. I should have called that out in my review.
Yes, insulting is what it was. Well, that's it for us today. That was a lot of talk about a spiritual successor and a piece of DLC and me being grouchy about Final Fantasy VII and reviews and what reviews really are all about here at RPG Fan. And if you want an example of what reviews are all about at RPG Fan, then there's a book that you should look into. we have a collaboration with Hyperplay RPG, and that is the RPG Fan Review Card Collection. And this is a book that collects approximately 300 of our review cards, as you can see on Instagram and other social medias. And we are very, very proud of this. It's a cool little book. I'm in it a bunch, Zach. You're in it a bunch. It's just a really cool book to have on your shelf, especially if you're like looking for something to play and you're like, I don't know, I want to play something new. And you can flip through this book, tons of games, and get a real quick little hit of review. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have lots of other things to find on RPG Fan. You can find all of that at www.rpgfan.com/shop. Another way to support us here at RPG Fan is to check out all of our podcasts. You're listening to Random Encounter. If you were enjoying Random Encounter, I thank you. You should check out last week's episode. Greg and I were on here and we were talking about the Fallout TV show, which seems to have made a bit of a splash. And I am thrilled to death about that because I really enjoyed the show. I've been a big fan of Fallout for years. And the fact that the show, in my opinion, lived up to the games and a lot of people seem to be embracing it, that's terrific. I'm so happy about that. And apparently it got a season 2. So I'm even happier about that. We also have Retro Encounter, which is RPG fans' retro podcast, hosted by Mr. Mike Solosi most days. And last week's episode was the first part of Ark the Lad, a look back at Ark the Lad, a PlayStation-era RPG. And the one before that was actually the Final Fantasy VII spoiler cast that Zach and I were talking about here. So if you have played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and you are curious, that's definitely something to check out. We also have Rhythm Encounter, which is RPG fans' music podcast. Last week, it was all focused on songs that you can cook to. So it was like, how to put this? It wasn't songs that are involved in RPGs where you're cooking. It was songs that you're puttering around the kitchen, you have to make supper. What songs are you listening to from RPGs? And it was some interesting choices of music on there. So I highly recommend that. If you'd like to get in contact with us here at Random Encounter, you can fire us off a message at podcast@rpgfan.com. I would adore hearing from you if you have any ideas for future episodes or discussion questions. I had a discussion question, but to be honest, the Final Fantasy VII conversation was a little bit more interesting, so we jumped into that. So if you have a more interesting discussion question, send it my way. If you'd like to send me an email, you can do so at jlogan@rpgfan.com, and you can also find me on Mastodon at johnologan@mastodon.social. Zach, where can we find you online?
The best way is probably email, zachw@rpgfan.com. You can also find me on our Discord as ZachW.
Easy. If you enjoy this podcast, please feel free to share it with your friends to help us get the word out there. And you can also rate us on iTunes or your other podcast player of choice. Zach, I really want to thank you for coming on tonight
of
and
course.
Talking about a game that you wish was better, but you still enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And also a game that is a continuation of a game that you love more than anything for the last couple of years. So
that's true.
The fact that you gave your time, especially on a school night, I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, buddy. Okay. And thanks to everyone out there for joining us as well. And everyone listening, whatever you're playing, have fun.